5. The clouds had rolled in late in the afternoon, according to Veronica, and tonight they covered the entire region. A light drizzle fell against the van's windshield as we drove up the steep incline toward our destination. I had the case in my lap in the front passenger seat, unwilling to set the last token in its proper position until we were in the appropriate cavern. Hunter had spoken of a podium, a stone dais directly beneath an opening in the cavity, and I pictured myself placing the metal box onto it before pressing the final hexagon into the cube.
"That's it," Tripp said, pulling over. "Road ends where the streams intersect, and there's a pathway leading into the mountains."
They weren't really mountains, at least not compared to the great ranges like the Himalayas, Rockies, or Andes, but they were tall, rising high into the sky. The clouds were low, creating a dense fog. It was chilly, and I zipped my navy blue jacket up. I was glad I hadn't shaved in some time, and I scratched at the beard. Marcus tossed a backpack at me, and I caught it, depositing the case inside. I closed the bag and slung it over my shoulders, not wanting to carry any more weight than this. My stomach felt okay, but it was a far cry from healed.
"Where the water flows, the pathway glows."
Veronica gripped a flashlight and she passed one to me.
"Let's see what we can find."
Insects chirped their nightly songs, and I heard a few birds call out as we walked along the stream. The trees were lush and green, giving off a fragrant scent. It was full of life here, as good a location as any to hide the bridge. Even if someone happened across the entrance to the cavern, they would think nothing of the strange setup, not ever imagining it might hold the entrance to another world inside, because you needed the case and tokens to access it. "My father and Clayton walked this very path 35 years ago, with this exact cube in their hands."
"If this is the right spot," Veronica chimed in.
Her comment was astute. Nothing here shouted, "Alien world entrance," to me. The path wasn't wide, and Marcus ran ahead, pulling an item from his bag. He turned it on, and the trail lit up in a blue glow.
"You bought a blacklight?"
I thought it was a good idea.
"I figured Hunter might have marked it off with something only a blacklight would pick up."
Marcus aimed it at the ground for a few steps, then at the tree trunks along the trail's edge. So far, nothing was out of the ordinary. The stream ran away from the top of the hill, and the fog grew thicker with each passing minute. My side burned with effort, and I peeked behind us, but Tripp was out of sight. He carried a handgun, and I really hoped we didn't run into any tourists out for a late-night hike. We'd look like quite the quartet. The path narrowed again, and we walked in single file toward the cliffside. The sound of the stream grew more distant as we moved away from it. This didn't feel right. I couldn't explain it, but as soon as we broke from the forest into a clearing near the fog-covered peaks, I knew it. Hunter said, "Seek a star's flight on a cloudy night." It's cloudy. It's night. I peered up, but there was no sign of the sky through the pea soup. No stars. We're in the wrong spot. The echo of an engine carried through the valley up to my ears, and I looked around. Tripp finally caught up, and he seemed worried.
"Is that what it sounds like?"
"That's a helicopter. I don't think any moonlight tours were planned, especially in this fog," Veronica said.
The light shone from behind us, and for a second I thought it might be the bridge, finding us instead of the other way around. But the wind that blustered around the rocky clearing told me otherwise.
"We have to go," Tripp said,
but two soldiers emerged from the pathway 20 feet from him. They were tricky to discern in the fog, the bright spotlight of the helicopter adding to the hazy effect. The rush of the wind finally cleared the low-lying cloud from the vicinity as the helicopter landed, and the two armed soldiers wearing black uniforms walked closer, guns aimed at the four of us. Their faces were obscured with masks, and they meant business. They motioned with their guns.
"Stay put," one barked over the noise of the helicopter.
It was easier to see with the mist scattered by the rotors. Marcus backed up, raising his hands. The blacklight shone into the sky.
"What do we do, Rex?"
Veronica asked, her voice muddled with fear. This was the third time in a week we'd faced the believers, and I was growing sick and tired of it. We were so close, and here they were again, jamming guns in our direction.
"I'll tell you what we're going to do."
The voice was confident, but somehow recognizable. The rotors slowed and out walked a man. Someone struggled behind him, and I saw another Believer soldier holding a woman inside the helicopter. It was Beverly. My entire body clenched like a snake about to strike. That was my sister. "Why is she here?" I shouted, and suddenly the mountaintop grew silent. With the chopper off, the fog began again, but not as thickly as before.
"Rex?"
"It's Fred," I said the name with disdain, my lips sticking together as they went dry. I charged toward him, uncaring about the guns pointing at me.
"Rex, hand the bridge over." I punched him in the face as hard as I could. My fist stung, but the pain scarcely registered.
"What have you done? Where are the kids?"
A soldier stepped between us, and Fred shoved the man aside. "The kids? My kids are fine, Rex. They're at the lovely little retreat you booked, sleeping it off until we retrieve them."
I stared at the man, blood dripping from his nose. He appeared so different in this light.
"Why, Fred?
Why the Believers?" I wanted to buy some time. Tripp's gun had vanished, telling me he'd concealed it when the soldiers had arrived. He was full of tricks. He was either guns blazing or quiet as a mouse, lingering like a shadow.
"Why? Why is it okay for millions of people to have faith in their God, but when we're absolutely confident the unknowns exist and are coming home, it's insane? We're a cult, a group of fanatics."
He wiped his upper lip, then broke into a smile.
"Too bad you won't see what's to come, Rexford.
When the world learns how deep the Believers go, there will be no turning back.
We're everywhere. We control governments, stock markets, and corporations. The Believers are the Earth's only hope, Rex. That's what you should understand. When the unknowns come," he tapped his watch, "and they're on the way, they will destroy us, unless the Believers are present to greet them. Can't your doctorate brain comprehend this?"
Fred had a gun in his hand, and he tapped it to his temple. I peered past him at the helicopter. The pilot held Bev, and she was crying with heavy, racking sobs. Her husband wasn't who she'd thought he was, and her world was devastated.
"Why the charade?" "I was told to position myself close to the family.
The famous Dirk Walker's kids. At first I thought about working at your school, becoming friends with you, but I hated the idea of teaching this generation of youth with their fragile egos and self-righteous opinions of everything." He pointed at Marcus, who was protectively standing beside Veronica. "I happened to meet Beverly one day at her workplace. I asked her to coffee, and a year later we were engaged. Can you imagine? True love." He laughed, a delirious sound that cut short in the thickening fog.
"You son of a bitch,"
I said, moving for Fred again, but his gun lowered as the laughing ceased.
"One more move and you're dead,"
he said it flatly, without emotion, and it was obvious he wasn't lying.
"What's the plan? You take the case and then what?"
I asked. He motioned to the helicopter, and one of the soldiers ran to it, patting a crate.
"We send a surprise to the other side."
Judging by the markings on the surfaces, it was a high-tech bomb, maybe a thermonuclear device. I cringed at the implications. He was banking on the bridge working and planned to send a nuclear bomb through the portal.
"Who's across the bridge?"
Fred and the Believers probably didn't know for sure, but I had to ask.
"Someone you don't want to meet," he said with so much self-assurance I found myself trusting his word on it.
"Jerry, prepare the device. We're going in,"
Fred called to his soldier. The only problem was this wasn't the entrance to the bridge. He'd followed us to the wrong location. It gave us an opportunity, albeit a slim one.
"Why don't you go scope it out, Fred? Let us help you. If what you say is true, I won't fight you on this.
I've been tricked by Hunter Madison. He lied about everything." I hoped my acting classes from the 9th grade were paying off. Fred stared at me, walking closer.
"Cliff, go up the path. Check if there's an entrance nearby."
The soldier nearest Trip jogged off, gun barrel bobbing as his helmet's light guided his path toward the mountain peak. He was quickly swallowed in the fog. We didn't have long. Once Cliff realized there was no cavern, he'd return and we'd be in trouble. I nudged Marcus with my elbow, and he must have sent a signal to Trip behind him. It was 3 against 4. 5 if you counted my sister, but They were each armed. Beverly shouted at Fred, cursing him for what he'd done to her and the kids, and he started to turn. I took the chance. I barreled into Fred and heard the gunshots behind me as Tripp fired at Jerry near the helicopter. Fred's gun fell to the rocks and my own wound stretched, a pain tearing through my stomach. I scrambled over him, but Marcus was there, snatching the weapon. Tripp had a handle on Jerry, who was crumpled to the ground, dead eyes watching the clouds. Fred spun on his back and he jabbed a punch into my gut, sending me reeling. I gasped as the air shot from my lungs. I squinted through the blackness and heard muffled shouts.
"Marcus, now!"
Veronica shouted, and I opened my eyes to see my sidekick standing over Fred. The gun lowered. He couldn't do it.
"I'm sorry, Rex," he said.
For a second, I thought Marcus was telling me he was with Fred, a believer. Then I understood. He'd already killed someone, and he couldn't do it like this. Point blank with the man staring him in the eye. Tripp shoved Marcus out of his way and hauled Fred to his feet. He pressed his pistol against Fred's temple, using the man as a shield while walking toward the helicopter and the last remaining soldier in the clearing.
"Hand her over or your boss gets it."
The soldier helped Beverly out and removed his mask. His frame was massive and he was older, maybe mid-60s. With gray hair and white stubble.
"Kill him. If you don't, I will,"
the guy said, releasing Beverly. For a moment, she just stood there, tears streaming down her face. And then she ran past Fred and to the spot where I lay on the rocks. Tripp still had Fred, and Beverly's husband fought to escape. Tripp clubbed him over the skull, sending him to the trail.
"Let's see it then," Tripp said.
The big soldier pulled a gun, but instead of pointing it at Fred or us, he aimed toward the cliffs. He ran off, and half a minute later we heard 3 gunshots. He came back, dragging Cliff's body with him. He dropped the believer soldier and shoved his gun in its holster.
"Who are you?"
I asked as Veronica assisted me to my feet. The gunshot wound was reopened, bleeding through my shirt and into my jacket.
"A friend."
His voice was gravelly.
"What the hell are you doing, Saul?" Fred asked with a laugh. "You're all going to die. They won't stop until you're gone and the bridge is closed forever. The unknowns are coming. Then you'll see."
He clawed his way to his feet, dashing toward the crate in the rear of the helicopter. Tripp and Saul raised their guns at the same moment, but it was another gun that fired, hitting Fred in the back. He slid forward on the stones, his breaths coming ragged. Beverly walked toward him, the gun taken from Marcus in her grip.
"I like to think I'm a reasonable woman, but what you did was unforgivable. Our children, Fred, what were you going to do with them?"
He managed to roll over, blood spilling from his lips.
"I love them, Bev. I love you too. It would make sense when the unknowns came. I wanted to save you."
More tears spilled from her eyes and she shook her head.
"You aren't my husband."
She walked away, leaving him sputtering, and a minute later, his chest stopped moving.
"We need to go," Saul said. "I take it you realized this isn't the bridge entrance."
I nodded, hardly able to stand. Veronica was there to brace me as we rushed for the helicopter. Tripp aimed at Saul.
"We can't trust this guy. Who's the hell to say he's not the sovereign?"
"Thank you for helping us," I whispered to Saul.
"No problem, kid. Only wish I could have exposed my presence to you sooner. I was deep undercover,"
he told me. "But Tripp's right. How can you prove your story?" I asked. Saul unbuttoned his shirt, pulling it apart. The tattoo on his chest stared back at me. I unzipped my jacket and tugged my shirt open, too. They matched. Beverly gasped.
"That's what Dad had, isn't it?"
"It is," I said. "And Hardy told us there were 4 of you with them. Clayton Belvedere, Dirk Walker, Brian Hardy, and..."
"Saul Goldstein."
He stuck his hand out. It was like shaking hands with a stone.
"When we learned what the believers were doing, I went in, having broken character for almost 4 decades."
"The tattoo. It looks like a P over a T. What does it mean?"
Veronica asked. Saul smiled, the expression frightening on the tough older man.
Promissa Terra, the Promised Land.